Try that again. No, Tzadi Zayin. Okay, we did the Mishnah yesterday on Tzadi Vav, and the Mishnah went through the Shulchan and the dimensions of the Shulchan, and then the Mishnah went into great detail in terms of how the bread was actually formed. We do have a machlokas in terms of the dimensions of the Shulchan itself. We'll talk more about that today, as we will go back to some classic discussion about the dimensions of the Mizbeach. Information that we've seen already. The Gemara is going to go over the dimensions of the Mizbeach. We will come back to that as well. But for the time being, however, we're going to focus for a good part of today about one issue, and that is the susceptibility of Tumah, specifically regarding the Shulchan, regarding the table. You remember yesterday we have a machlokas about the Shulchan and its Mizgeret. Okay, there was a frame around the table. Now the Gemara presents a machlokas in terms of the frame, whether it was lamat or lamala, whether the frame was above or whether it was below. Now if it was below, so it would basically be like the tables that we have in our house. So not to the extent that we're discussing where the frame was a full tefach, but still nevertheless though, in other words, in our house there's like a lip below the table. It serves as basically just a way to finish off the table. So there's a little bit of a ledge below. So that's one possibility. And the Gemara liked that possibility, actually, because if you remember from yesterday's daf, the Gemara says that that there's a ceiling of the Shulchan, meaning the Shulchan, of course, is a table. The Shulchan is only so high, but in terms of the bread that was stacked on top of it, so according to one opinion, when you stack the bread one on top of another, the bread went up 15 tefachim. 15 tefachim, that's sizable. That's, 60 inches in the air, right, approximately. That's pretty high bread. So the Gemara says, well, the Shulchan can only be Mekadesh up to 15 Tfachim, not beyond 15 Tfachim. So the Gemara says, I like the idea that the Mesgeret is below, so that means that the bread was flush on the table, on the actual table, and so therefore when the bread was stacked one on top of another, so they actually made it to 15 Tfachim. But the Gemara said yesterday, but if the Mesgeret is above, so you're putting the bread on the Mesgeret, so that makes the bread go up higher, but then the Gemara said yesterday, but that you don't have to understand it like that, meaning the Mizgeret could be above and simply inclined outward, and the bread still remained not flush on the table itself. Okay, so that was the Gemara yesterday. But nevertheless, so we had two opinions in the Gemara. The Gemara does not resolve this issue, whether the Mizgeret was above or whether the Mizgeret was below. Okay, we are on Tzadi Vav Amud Beis. We're in 96B, and we're continuing right into this discussion. Haisa Amar Rav Yochanan. Yep. Six lines from the top of the page. Tzadivav Amud Beis. Haisa Amar Rav Yochanan. L'divrei Omer Mizgarto Lamata. Haisa Tavla Misapechas Temeya. All right. Before I start reading, let me just go back one step further. Okay. Basic information. We know that Kli Eitz, right? Something's made out of wood. So in order for it to be Mekabel Tumah, A, it has to be a Kli, it has to be some sort of serviceable utensil, it has to have some sort of function to it, and B, it's got to have a toch. It's got to have an inside. It's got to be like a cup, or anything that you could store something inside of it. If it's made out of wood, it has to be a Kli, and it has to have a toch. If it doesn't have a toch, so then it's not going to be Mekabel Tumah. So, for example, if I made a wooden fork, it's not Mekabel Tumah, because it doesn't have a toch. If I made a wooden knife, it's not Mekabel Tumah. It's a kli, it's certainly a utensil, it has function to it, but it's not Mekabel Tumah, because it doesn't have a toch.
The wooden should have a toch.
The wood needs...
Metal, like a hammer.
When it comes to metal, so metal doesn't need a toch. No. Metal, as long as it's a kli, so it's Mekabel Tumah, period. But when it comes to wood, one of the rules regarding wood, in the world of Tumah Tahara, is that it must have a toch. So the Gemara says, now let's think about this for just a moment. Let's entertain the notion that the Mizgeret was on the top. Perfect. We have a toch. Okay? Because the Mizgeret's on the top, so that means basically, it's like a chest. Right? Table, Mizgeret around the top, it has a toch. Good. I understand why the table's Mekabel Tumah. But, let's talk for a moment about where the Mizgeret is below, which is one of the options that we have. So if the Mizgeret's below, so maybe the table's not Mekabel Tumah. Okay. Now, let's say, okay, the table's not Mekabel Tumah. Why not suggest that would be a sensible conclusion? It sounds reasonable. Table's not Mekabel Tumah. Let's just say it. So the Gemara says, based on a pasuk that we're going to quote later on, is it the pasuk from Yecheskel? Is it the pasuk from Vayikra? Pasuk from Vayikra. Okay. We're going to quote a pasuk later on. As a starting point for the discussion, we're going to say the table, the Shulchan, is the Mekabel Tumah. Okay? Again, that's going to be our starting point. I mean, you can argue that the table should be Mekabel Tumah, but we're going to say it is based on a pasuk in Vayikra. All right. So if that's the starting point, so let's start this conversation again. If the Mizgeret is on the top, good. I understand why the table's Mekabel Tumah. Table's made out of wood, right? Let's go over our basic rules. The wood needs to be a kli and it needs to have a toch. Good. The table is a kli and it has a toch. Because when the Mizgeret's on the top, when the frame's on the top, so, you're right, the top of this, if I look at the top of the table, it's a receptacle. But if the Mizgeret is on the bottom, right, it's a frame that goes below the tabletop. So the Gemara says, so now I don't understand. Meaning the conversation starts by saying that the table's Mekabel Tumah, and I know that by wood it has to have a toch. So how is it working? How come the table is susceptible to Tumah? That is essentially the Gemara's question. And here's what essentially the Gemara is going to answer. Oh, I get it. Because what you could do is you could turn the table over. It'd be strange, but you could turn the table over and you could use the table upside down. Okay. Yeah. Right? Now, I guess it lends itself to the discussion, well, what if you don't normally do that? Which is true, by the way. By a table, you don't normally do that. But the Gemara says maybe that's where we should go with this discussion. Let's see this inside in the Gemara. Again, I'll start again. Haisa Amar Rabbi Yochanan, right? Six lines on the top. Haisa Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Divrei Amar Mizgarto Lamata Haisa Tavla HaMisapeches Tameya. Yeah. If the Mizgaret is below, so you know what? To the question of why is the table Tameh? I know why. Tavla HaMisapeches. Because I could take the table and I could turn it upside down and I could use it upside down.
Because you'd still have a...
Because then while it's upside down, now it has a toch. Now it has an inside. Ledivre Homer Miskartola Mala. But if I hold the Miskaret is on the top, I say Tava Misapeches Tibailach. So good. So to the question of why is the table Mekabel Tumah, I have a very straightforward answer. Because of the frame that goes around the top. And as to the question of what if can I turn something over and then say it's Mekabel Tumah, I don't know. Meaning because by the table, all I know is the Mizgeret runs along the top, and that's why it's Mekabel Tumah. Now, the Gemara, right, as it normally does, takes the conversation in the reverse order. Meaning, the starting point of the whole conversation is that the table is Mekabel Tumah. Okay? And then we went to the more sophisticated question of, well, what if I invert the table? Right? Can I say that it's Mekabel Tumah based on an inversion? So, but then the Gemara goes backwards, and the Gemara says, "How do you know the table is Mekabel Tumah?" So, good. Next part of the Gemara's discussion. So, Mechlal de Shulchan Bar Kibula Tumahu. So, the Gemara says you're starting off with the premise that the table is Mekabel Tumah. So, the Gemara says, "Kli Eita Asu Lanachas Uvechol Kli Eita Asu Lanachas Ein Mekabel Tumah." The Gemara says, "But wait a second. Stationary objects are not Mekabel Tumah. Meaning, as another general rule in the world of Tumah and Tahara." Even if it's wood, and even if it has an inside, if it's kli ha'asui lanachas, if it's something which is stationary, and you never plan on using it, it is not susceptible to tumah. Now, the Gemara is going to learn out based on psukim.
What do you mean using it?
You can move
it. What do you mean using
meaning,
it?
Meaning, it's in theory we can move it, meaning it's not that it's fastened to the ground. It just simply means that we're putting it here and we have no intent of moving it whatsoever. The Gemara in Megillah in the fourth parak, we remember, it's the Gemara over there discussed as an Aron Kodesh. Right? Aron Kodesh that was made out of wood. And the Gemara over there wants to know, is that Aron going to be Mekabel Tumah? Meaning it's a wood kli that has, right, it has a toch, it certainly has a receptacle, it holds the Sefer Torah, so is it Mekabel Tumah? And part of the Gemara's discussion over there is, no one's moving an Aron Kodesh. Meaning that Aron Kodesh is meant to be in one place and stay in one place. Good. So the Gemara, that was the discussion over there by the Aron Kodesh. The Gemara now over here basically has the same discussion regarding a Shulchan. But not a Shulchan, the Shulchan. The one that's in the Heichal. Now who's moving it? Nobody's moving it. And so the Gemara wants to know. We have a general rule, it's based on Psukim, that in order for a wooden utensil, even though it has a toch, in order for it to be mekabel tumah, it has to be moved from one point to another. So my time of dumi the sack. Now the Gemara teaches us the drasha, because it has to be similar to a sack, right? Be'inan ma sack mital tumah levirekan, I've called mital tumah levirekan. Look, the whole nature of a sack is that it's moved around, right? I take a sack from point A to point B. Sometimes empty, sometimes full. So same thing with anything else that's going to be mekabel tumah that's in the sack family. Part of what's in the sack family, oddly enough, is wood. Wood is in that same camp as sack. So wood, in order for it to be mekabel tumah, has to be moved around from one point to another. So the Gemara says, good. So I will tell you something about this shulchan. It was moved. Shochanami mitata malavirekan, kedurish lakish. The Amar Reish Lakish, the Gemara now quotes a statement of Reish Lakish. We've seen this earlier in Menachos. And the Gemara quotes this a number of times. Ma'i dichsiv al shochan ha-tahor. The Pasuk says, the shochan ha-tahor. Right, this is it. This is the Pasuk in Parsha Samor that teaches us that the table is tahor. Tahor meaning, tar mechlal di'ika tameh. So the Gemara says that means that it could be susceptible to tumah. Malamed, so the Reish Lakish teaches us, Shemagbin oso la'ole regalim. So every regal, every festival, you'd have throngs of Jewish people coming up to Yerushalayim, and to show off, to display the table, and not just the table, but the lechem that's on the table, and to show that, you know, it's been on this table for a week. What do you normally expect, right? Dry, stale bread. Meanwhile, it was fresh. It was hot. I don't know how people see freshness. You could maybe
it's not green,
right? maybe the aroma, right? Maybe that's the key element over here. Shemagbina solala regalam omarin bo lechem. V'omrim lahem, ra'u chibat chem lifnei amakom. Look how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves you. Because, right, this doesn't normally happen, where bread's on a table for over a week, and it stays fresh. That's not normal. But the point is, look, the demonstrative fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, here, Nate's open miracle. Right, everyone gets to see it. And then the Gemara in our discussion says, so what do you see? The table is moved. Once you see the table is moved, so now it fits all the qualifications of something that's going to be mekabel tumah. It's a kli made out of wood. It has a toch because of the mezgeret, right, because of the frame. It is moved. Good. All the criteria of what would be mekabel tumah, which is, by the way, what we need to get to that point, because the Pasuk in Amor says that the table is Tahor, which means that it could be Tameh, and now we have to put all these facts together.
If an object cannot be Tameh, it cannot accept Tahor either?
Huh?
If an object cannot become Tameh,
right,
it's not Tahor either?
No, if an object is impervious to Tumah, so that means that it will be for a lifelong totally impervious to Tumah.
It's
not Tamei, meaning, yeah, it's Tahor. We'll say it's Tahor. Right? I don't think there's something in between Tamei and Tahor. I understand what you're asking, but I don't think there's something in between. If it's not the opposite of Tamei, it's Tahor.
So the question comes, why we want to make the Shulchan...
We don't want to make it Tamei, it's just that we are... could it become Tamei? Is it susceptible to Tumah?
If you don't have this...
If without the Mezgeret, without the frame,
so
then there's nothing to talk about. Right, it's so not...
The question becomes, why... I mean, I know it's a philosophical question, it's a why question, it's not a how question, but
right,
why would Hashem want to have this Shulchan become Mekabel Tumah just by having a masgeret or a lip?
Correct. Okay.
You could have...
Right. So you know that question is beyond my...
Yeah.
my ability to answer, but yeah, we're right. In other words,
it could have been that the whole design
of the Shulchan should be that it's not Mekabel Tumah. That could have been the design.
Right.
And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for his Ratzon, for his interest, and I don't understand, made it so that the Shulchan is Mekabel Tumah. Okay, your question is good. I certainly don't have an answer. Kediv Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Dam Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Nes Gadol Nase B'Lachem Apanim. Siluko Kisiduro. And this statement of Reish Lakish goes hand in hand with the statement of Reish Shuv Ben Levi that when you take it out, it's as just as fresh as when you put it on. Shenamar. Now we go back to our pasuk in Shmuel that we spent yesterday talking about, right? With the story where David goes and runs away and is near death and needs to eat, and he even eats the lechem upon him. And the pasuk over there describing the lechem upon him says, "Lasum lechem chom biyom hilakcho." It's hot. The date's taken off the table. Date's taken off the table is over a week after it was put on the table. Good. So that is step one of today's discussion. The table's mekabel tumah. What we've learned today so far in terms of getting to that point is that A, the table has a toch because of the mezgeret. Then there's a more complicated issue, which is the mezgeret above or the mezgeret below. If it's above, so then we understand why it has a toch. If it's below, how do we argue that the table has a toch? And the answer that the Gemara proposes is that we invert the table, and that's how it has a toch, and that obviously is a bigger, much bigger chiddush. And then the second part of what we learned today is that in order for a kli eitz to be mekabel tumah, it has to be moved from one time to another, and we learned that the table is moved three times during the year. Okay, and by the way, in other words, you could have made another argument and said, three times during the year is not really called moving it around. I mean, that's, you know.
But the other thing is lifting qualifies as moving and it's Shabbat transferring. Like, lifting is not.
It seems like it was just lifted. I mean,
when you lift something in Shabbat, it's not considered.
The Gemara is not very clear in terms of how far it was moved, meaning I don't think they took it out of the Heichal.
No, it seemed like it was just lifted up. No?
Right. Correct. Okay. Good. Next part of the discussion. Okay, a lot of Tumah Tahara today, but we'll make through it. I'm sure. The table gleim mishum sipui. So the Gemara says now the table was plated with gold. Oh, right. Not a minor detail. Right. The shulchan, which was wood, was then plated with gold. So now this takes us to a new level of the discussion, which is if something has a gold plating. So is it gold or is it wood? Meaning, is a simple legal question. How do we define it? Do we find it as gold or do we find it as wood? And here in our discussion, it makes all the difference in the world. Because if it's gold, that means it's a metal. Now that it's in the metal family, so you don't need, no, not prevent, just the opposite. Now, you don't. It becomes even, metal is more susceptible to tumah than wood is. By metal, you don't need a toch. By metal, you don't need to be moved around from place to place. Metal, all you need it to be is a kli, and that's it. So the Gemara says, so, right, good part of the discussion now. Wood is plated with gold, so maybe it should be legally defined as metal, not wood. So Milo Tanan, in fact, Mishnah and Kalim, takes us exactly to this point of the discussion. We learned in the Mishnah over there, Ashokhan va dubaki shenif chasu o shechipan b'shayish. If I have a table or a dubaki, some sort of utensil, right, a folding chair. Okay, doesn't matter right now. I mean, it matters, but right, you have a table that nifchasu. There was a hole in it. O shechipan b'shayish, or I layered it with a. I'm going to say a plating, but I don't really mean a plating. But there was a layer of shayish, of marble, laid on top of it. Now, shayish is marble. That means that it's stone. We know, right? We talked today about the wood family. We talked about the metal family. And let's talk about the stone family. Stone is not susceptible to tumah, ever. Right? Even if you make it into a kli. Right? There is stone, there's bone. Right, certain things which are just simply not mekabel tumah, period. So the Gemara says, so now that we have shayish, if you have a table, wooden table, and I layer marble over it. So, the Mishnah goes on to describe, v'sharibo makam hanachas kosos tameim. Now, if I didn't layer every part of it, but there's still wood exposed, right, a lot of wood, meaning enough wood where I could take my cup and not put it onto the marble, but put it onto the wood, so it's mekabel tumah. What that Mishnah is essentially telling us is that if the table were layered with marble throughout, and there's no wood exposed, so now it's marble. It's a marble table. So the Gemara says, so our shulchan, right, is plated with gold. So shouldn't we take it now out of the wood family and put it into the metal family? Great. Gemara's question. Rav Yehuda Omer, Makam Hanachas Chaticho Shire in. I'm sorry, Makam Hanachas Chaticho. And Rav Yehuda argues about how much wood needs to be exposed on the marble table. Okay. That's the Mishnah in Kalim. But what's clear from that Mishnah in Kalim, and the Gemara here says it, is Shire in, Lo Shire Lo. So the Gemara says, if it were plated totally, it now redefines itself with the plating. So if it's plated with marble, it's impervious to tumah. If it's plated with gold, like the shulchan in the mizbeach, so then it's now metal. So v'chitema, now the Gemara is anticipating an answer. Kan b'tzipui omeid, kan b'tzipui she'eino omeid. Well, maybe there's a difference between a plating that is a plating that's permanent versus a plating that's not permanent, but the Gemara is going to just dismiss this suggestion out of hand. So Reish Lakish wants to know about this plating. Does it make a difference whether it's permanent or not permanent? Does it make a difference whether the sides were plated, the sides were not plated? Va'amar lei, and Rav Yochanan categorically answers his brother-in-law. Lo shnat sipu amei, lo shnat sipu she'eno amei, lo shnat chipas lavaz vizin, lo shnat lo chipas lavaz vizin. Rav Yochanan says, look, it's plated. Right now it's plated. End of the discussion. Meaning, if it's plated in totality and there are no openings on the top, so now it takes on the nature of its plating. So if it's plated with marble, so it's stone. Impervious to tumah. If it's plated with gold, like the shulchan in the Beis HaMikdash, so now it's gold. So the Gemara now wants to know, how did we have on Tzadi Vavam Beis an entire discussion about wood and all the requirements of wood, when meanwhile we can't ignore it, seemingly we can't ignore the fact that the shulchan was plated with gold, and why are we not having a discussion of its metal? So, so the Gemara says, okay, but maybe we can argue it this way. It's not any type of wood. How do you translate that to English?
Wood.
Cedar?
Cedar wood?
Yeah.
Yeah, is that what I say? Yeah.
Shittim is acacia.
Acacia wood?
Yeah.
Acacia, right. Acacia.
Okay, okay, fine. So the, okay.
Is that the one that Yaakov planted?
Yeah. Now, right. Now, of course, all this makes sense, no difference to me, because I don't know the difference between cedar and acacia, right? I just got the hang of ficus trees. I just learned that, and I've been living here for a while. So the Gemara says, so maybe you'll tell me that this is atzei shittim, it's acacia wood, and important wood, significant wood, and so therefore it's not batel. Chashiva v'lo betili. Hani chloresh lakish damer lo shana v'lo bekli achsalgos habayim medinas yam. So Reish Lakish does make such an argument that if the wood that's being plated is such an important, significant wood, so the wood doesn't become bata. So good. So for Reish Lakish's standpoint, such an argument can be made. Elo l'Rav Yochanan, but his brother-in-law disagrees on this point. Da'amar kli mesamis nami b'teili. So Ma'ikal ha'meimor. So Rav Yochanan says, no, I don't care what kind of wood it is. The plating is what it is. The plating will define it. So the Gemara says, so now, back to square one, so I don't understand. So the Gemara's answer is, Shani Shochan, the Rechman Akar Ye'etz. Okay, so the general rule is, like the Mishnah Kalim taught us, that plating is what it is, meaning the definition of a kli is based on the outer layer. Okay, so if it's gold, it's metal. If it's shayish, it's stone. Good. The shulchan, the base of mikdash, is going to be the exception. Why is it going to be the exception? Because when the Torah describes it, the Torah calls it kli eitz, it calls it wood. Now here's another interesting point. When we say the Torah, we don't mean chumash, we mean Sefer Yecheskel. Okay, and we've seen this a number of times. Sefer Yecheskel is, right, we've just dealt with this past couple of days. Sefer Yecheskel is a primary source. It's a Navi, right? He had Nevuah when he said it. So we're going to give it, in this discussion, Right? We're not going to learn a new mitzvah from Sefer Yecheskel, right? Everyone understands that. But in this discussion, in terms of helping us define things, we're going to use Sefer Yecheskel as basically a, not a dictionary, but basically a way of legally defining and categorizing.
So what happened to Aaron? Because Aaron is, you have to move, you don't have the requirement for movement anymore. Once it's metal, it's
if it's plated with gold, you're right.
Right, it is.
Right, so, meaning, okay.
So the discussion of movement is not necessary.
Right, I understand that, but the Gemara's discussion today is only regarding the Shulchan, but you're right, meaning it could be the same thing as regarding Aaron. Shenemar HaMizbech Eitz Shalosh Amos Gavoa Arko Shtaim Amos Umiktsao Slov Arko V'Kirasov Eitz V'Yidaber Elai Zeh HaShulchan Shalifnei Hashem. Right, you say this pasuk, right? When? Before benching?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so the... good.
So the, for the third
so we have this pasuk in Yecheskel, and the pasuk in Yecheskel calls it a wooden shulchan. Okay? So now that the pasuk in Yecheskel does that, so basically we have our regular rules, which is the Mishnah and Kalim, which is it's defined by the layer on top, the plating on top, and then the shulchan and the base of Mikdash is the exception. Why is it the exception? A pasuk in Yecheskel, right? There's obviously more in terms of understanding it, but right now all I have is that superficial understanding. Now, the Gemara has one little piece of Agadita. It's a popular piece of Agadita. People know this. Pasuk b'mizbech v'sayim b'shulchan. Meaning, if you look back at the pasuk in Yecheskel, there was a discussion about the mizbech, and then the pasuk seamlessly transitions into a talk about the shulchan, about the table. So, Rav Yochanan, Rav Elazar, Dami Tavai, so the Gemara says, b'derech drush, in a way of understanding that is, drasha, bizman she beis hamikdash kaim mizbeach mechaper l'adam. When we had a beis hamikdash, so it was the mizbeach. The mizbeach is a mechaper. The achshav she'ein beis hamikdash kaim, but now that we don't have a beis hamikdash, shochan o shaladam mechaper alav. So what's the mechaper? What provides for atonement for us? Our table. Tables in our dining room. Tables in our dining room provide a kapara. What are we supposed to do? We're supposed to offer animals on it. Right? What does that mean exactly? How do we have, even in other words, obviously it's drush, but even in the drush, there has to be some level of an understanding. How does the table serve as a kapara? Rashi over here writes,
take your time.
Shulchan shohad mechaper alav denosing proofs of orchim. So Rashi says achnasas orchim, right? So hospitality, right? Somebody needs a place to eat, and you bring him into your table. So the act of chesed, this is the way Rashi understands the drush. The act of chesed, by you giving food from your table to him, so that is a kapar, that's an atonement, that is tantamount to bringing a karban in the Beis HaMikdash. Right, Tosa says the same thing. Right, Tosa says that it has to do with providing, giving food to people who are in need of food. Okay. Yes.
It seems to me it could be construed that the pasuk when it says shulchan is tavor means it's always tavor.
Yep.
Always.
All right. I had the same thought myself. Meaning, you could have understood the pasuk that way. The Gemara does not. The Gemara clearly demonstrates from that pasuk that it could, right. I'm with you as well. I don't know why the Gemara is compelled, but obviously it was. Why the Gemara is compelled to say that means it could be tummy. Your point very well taken. Okay.
Golden or Mizbech HaPnimi. That has wood in it or no?
I don't remember. No.
What are you talking about?
The Mizbech HaPnimi. Is it wood? Is it wood plated with gold or is it gold throughout?
I thought it was wood plated with gold.
The olive.
I think so. I think everything is plated.
Except
for the menorah, right? Right. You're right. Right. Except for the menorah. Menorah is miksha.
So that's also miksha like a table. I mean, they're going to treat it the same and say it's wood.
I mean, I don't know. In other words, again, same discussion. Right. Does it have a toch? Is it moved around? Our discussion today was focused.
Considered a metal?
Right. Our discussion today was focused around the table. Right. And the pasuk in Yecheskel, which tells us that this is the exception to the rule. The pasuk only says it regarding the shulchan. Okay. So in the actual formation of the Mishkan, so the Torah says, you're going to make karosav, kaposav, uksosav, umenakiyosav. These are all words that we don't know what they mean. Now when I say we, meaning not only am I talking about myself, right, and maybe some of the other members of the daf, but even the Gemara is a little like, what are these things? So kara, that we know is a plate. Kaposav, right? That's a strange word. Kisosav. These are just strange words. So the Gemara now is going to explain every single one of these words. The Gemara is basically going to be a walking dictionary for these words. The Gemara quotes this in the name of Rav Kitina. So ka'arosav eilu defusim. So when we say ka'arosav, that's the mold, right? We talked about this the other day. There were three molds. When I baked the lechem upon him, I needed to go conform to a certain shape. How did I ensure that it made it into that shape? Answer is the ka'arosav, which normally means a plate, but in this context means the molds. Kaposav eilu bazichim. When we talk about the kaposav, we mean the spoonfuls which are used for the holding of the lavona. Kisosav elu snipim. Those are the boards on the side that served as shelvings for the to support the lechem upon him. Minakiosav, what's that? Elu kanim. Those are the hollow reeds that are put between the two boards that actually held the bread up. Three per loaf, except for the top one, which only had two, which we'll talk more about later this morning. Asher yusach bahem. Then the pasuk goes on and it says, "Asher yusach bahem." What does that mean? The Gemara says, "Shemasachim b'ames alechem." It was used to cover schach, like sukkah. It was used to cover the bread, not cover in the sense like a canopy cover, but cover meaning it went over the bread. Most of Rava. Okay, Rava asks the following question: Lo sidur kaim below netilah sam dochas haShabbos. You can't arrange the stuff on Shabbos. Meaning, the rods, the beams.
What's the big deal about doing it? I'm like, you know, the malachat shabbat.
So wait, because we're going to discuss that in just a moment. So the Gemara says it's not Dochas Shabbos, right? The Mishnah told us that. That was yesterday's Mishnah. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Isa gadacha daraisa, meaning, what did we just do? We just quoted a pasuk in Parshas Truma. And we just said that pasuk, with all those funny words, means the shelving, right? The tubes between the shelving, meaning the pasuk is describing these things. So what do you mean you can't do it on Shabbos? Sure you can do it on Shabbos. Right? You can do it on Shabbos because it's mandated by the Torah. So I'm mind Dochas it's a Shabbos. So this is Rava's question. But then Rava thinks about it for a moment and he says, no, not a good question. I take it back. I want to mulligan on my question. The Amri did not because we... We learned in the Mishnah called Amar Rabbi Akiva called Malach Hashem Shalol Asos Meir Shabbos Ein Adoches HaShabbos, because we go back to the rule that we learned yesterday. It's one of the larger rules in Shas. We see this rule time and again. If I could do it before Shabbos, it's not Doches Shabbos. The setting up of the shelving that could have been done, or the dismantling of the shelving that could have been done before Shabbos. And wait just one second. And Rav explains why this is so. Haninami Asher Delo Dachi Shabbos Alayu. So time am I, and Rava goes on to explain why. Why is it that I don't have to set up, arrange the shelving on Shabbos? Because time am I Delo Liyafish Lechem. The whole reason why I have the shelving is, remember, I want to give the bread support. I want air to go through the bread. I don't want the bread to basically sit one on top of the other. So for the 24 hours of Shabbos, it's okay. Meaning, if I take the little rods out before Shabbos, and I have the bread sit one on top of the other going into Shabbos, and then when I replace the bread, I replace it without the shelving, and then Motzei Shabbos, I set it up so now they're shelving and they're the rods in between, and now the bread is sitting on the rods, and good, all that can be done, and the bread won't spoil. So let me just first finish reading this and then I'll pause and I'll take question. So my time I might do bechi haishiure lo miyafesh. For that amount of time for Shabbos, we don't have to set up the shelving. Kiditanya, we learned on a brisa, and the Gemara now is going to record a brisa that basically says exactly what we just said. Keitza nechnas me'er Shabbos v'shamtam. You go in on Friday afternoon. One of the jobs of the Kohanim is to go in Friday afternoon and take down the shelving. Leave the bread there. meaning, right, bread's got to stay on the table because, you know, I'm only taking it off tomorrow on Shabbos, but Friday afternoon, make sure to take off the shelving. Umenichem la'arkos shel shulchan, place it next to the shulchan, lengthwise. Umotzei Shabbos nechnas magibar rosha shochala machnis kana tachta v'chozem magbir rosha shochala machnis kana tachta. Motzei Shabbos, one of the Kohanim's jobs is to now assemble the shelving. Meaning the bread's already there, good. So we're going to lift the bread up a little bit, put the shelving underneath, good. So, arba chalot tzricho, let's just finish the braisa. Four loaves of bread tzricho, shlosha, shlosha. Kind of remember, the column is made up of six loaves. The bottom loaf, as the braisa is about to tell us, was flush on the table. Now you're going to have four gaps, right, over the bottom. Four gaps, one, two, three, four. We're going to put three rods in between. Three times four is 12. Plus,
On Motzei Shabbos.
Plus two more between the fifth and the sixth. How come two, not three? So the Gemara is going to tell us. Anyone want to guess? It's only one loaf of bread. It can two rods is all you need to hold the weight. El Yonah in Etzricha L'Shaim L'Fisha Ein Alem Masui HaTachtona Etzricha Kolika L'Fisha Menachas Al Tiaro Shel Shochan. Period. That is the end of the Braisa. The Braisa is supportive of what Rav has just basically said. You can go without shelvings for Shabbos. Okay, good. Now we're going to get to Ben's question. The Gemara does not discuss Ben's question, and it's so interesting. And Ben wants to know, right, which is pretty much the question to ask, what's the big deal?
What's the malach over there?
Right, what's the big deal? Meaning, we just had almost about a half an amud of Gemara that talked about, well, don't set up the shelving on Shabbos, you can't do it. Well, since you could have done it before Shabbos, so therefore you don't do it on Shabbos. And then Mark quotes the Bryce, and the Bryce supports it as well. And then we need to ask really the basic question, what's the big deal? Meaning, so you set up the shelving on Shabbos. What kind of malacha are we talking about? What is the malacha that we're talking about? Any suggestions?
Building.
So the place to go to would seem to be building. However, as a general rule, Ain binyan ustira bekalim. This is not a structure. This is not a building. We're not building a house. We're just putting together Legos.
You could collapse a table at home and not
put it on. Right, collapsing a table at home. This is kalim. And the general rule is ain binyan ustira bekalim. And then when it comes to utensils, so building is not going to be the operative issue. So
these parts all come apart.
Tikkun kli, that's a good one, right? Tikkun kli is a very good one. Okay, so I'm going to show you Rashi. What is talked about at length on this daf is one Rashi. I mean, every Rashi could be talked about, but Rashi over here makes a striking remark. Let me find the Rashi. Amai lo dochi Shabbos. Why can I not be dochi Shabbos? Rashi is about a third of the way down. Right, the Dibra Amas calls Amai lo dochi Shabbos. The first words in the line is Kinda Mefakta Lael, as we learned above. Okay, but Amai lo dochi Shabbos. I'm going to read this Rashi. Alpha gav de ein shvus b'mikdash. Now Rashi says, now you know there are no derabbanans in the mikdash, right? As a rule, there's no isuri derabbanan in the mikdash. So, meaning that obviously the rabbis made a whole series of gzeras for us to live by in order to safeguard and to protect. In the Beis HaMikdash, there's no shvus. So, Rashi's essentially saying, so what's the issue? Meaning, right, Rashi, it's funny, Rashi starts off with an assumption. You know, it's not Nisa D'Araisa, and at best, what we're talking about over here is an Nisa D'Rabbanan. And so what's the issue? So Rashi says, "Haytilto lav mishum shvusu ela demichzei kabona v'soser." So Rashi says, well, you should know that this movement, this assembling of the shelves, is not an issa derabanan, but it's mechzei kabona v'soser. A very difficult Rashi to understand. Very difficult. It looks like bona v'soser. It looks like building. It looks like building, and it looks like you're demolishing. Now Rashi doesn't say it is building and it is demolishing. Right. Now the reason why Rashi doesn't say that is because it's not building and demolishing. We're not talking about a building. We're talking about kalim. It looks like building and demolishing.
But nobody's seeing it. It's only
number one, Ben points out. First of all, who's seeing it? Number two. When Rashi says it looks like building, so basically what is Rashi saying? It's a Rabbanan, right? We put it in the category of Marasayan. I'm not even sure if Rashi means that. Rashi just simply means that, look, it looks like building, so therefore the rabbis prohibited it. So, right, Rashi is very difficult to understand. Meaning, in one sentence, Rashi says, you know, Ein Shvus B'Mikdash, but this looks like building. Which takes us right back to the point where it seems like it's a Shvus. Now, Tosfos... Tosfos Cedar Hakanim. So first thing that Tosfos does is Tosfos quotes Rashi. It's the third to last Tosfos on the page. Lo Cedar Hakanim. Alpha Gav Dein Shvus Ben Mikdash. I tilt a lot. Mishum Shvus. Well, let Mishum Nemechli Kabonav Tosfos. Kach Perish Bekunchos. Well, Lo Mashma Came Bereish Kol Kalim. So Tosfos says, check out the Gemara in Shabbos. Right, tells you where to go. Kuf Chav Gimel Midbeis. And Amar Kanim Kodem Hataras Kalem Nishnu Mashma Daleka Ella Isser Ba'alma. In other words, look at the Gemara over there. The Gemara over there is a Muksa discussion, right? The Gemara over there, if I remember correctly, was the basics about when was Muksa instituted and the stages in which Muksa was instituted on Shabbos. But anyway, this discussion about the shelving in the for the Shulchan is in that Gemara over there, which makes it sound like this is all about Muksa. V'ashka chanam, right? So in other words, Tosfos says very simply, this is a Muksa issue. Now, as to the question of, if it's a Muksa issue, so what's the problem? We're in the Beis HaMikdash. So Tosfos to that says, V'ashka chanam, Yishvos Tosfos B'Mikdash, Kigon, Stir El Yon Shem Yitaka Naga Hamunach B'Perek Basra De'erevin. As far as Shvos B'Mikdash, Tosfos says, we are not fundamentalists. Meaning, there are gradations. When we say Ein Shvus B'Mikdash, we mean the lighter Isuri D'Rabbanan are not in the Beis HaMikdash. But there are some Isuri D'Rabbanan that apply in the Beis HaMikdash. And Tosfos will say, count this as one of them. Meaning, Tosfos is now arguing, not like Rashi. It looks like building and demolishing. No, I don't go for that. This is all about Muksa, says Tosfos. What about the rule of Ein Shvus B'Mikdash? Tosfos says, no, not always. Most Isuri D'Rabbanan don't apply in the Beis HaMikdash. Some do. This one does. Okay. Again, more to talk about. I just gave you the Rashi Prakim. I just give you the
whole thing. They take it out for the bread not to get stale. But there was a bigger nets was going on all the time for the whole bread to stay warm. So why are we so concerned?
Right. So the general approach to that, right, that to that question, the general approach is we do everything within our power. Ain't some chenalanes, meaning we don't rely on the miracle. So we do everything within our power to work within the guidelines of nature, and then. Look, we know Akash Baruch has got to intercede because it's not going to go a whole week without...
Right.
We know that. But we have to do our part, right? In some chanal anes, we still have to put in our efforts to make sure that everything we can so that it does not get stale.
Is that why we don't levitate?
That's correct. Tanan Hasan, we learned in the Mishnah over there. Another Mishnah in Kalim. Okay. We have over here in our Mishnah a very simple machlokus in terms of what are the dimensions of the table? Meaning, how big is the table? So I know the answer. An amma by two ammas. Okay. But that's only the beginning of the discussion because how long is an amma? So generally speaking, we say an amma is six tfachim. In the Beis HaMikdash, according to one opinion, an amma is five tfachim. Okay? So, okay, I know that could be a little bit confusing.
According to that opinion, and everywhere else is...
Right, in other words, generally speaking, there is a default, right? The default of an amma is six tfachim, right? Through anywhere else. When I measure, let's say, for example, Tchum Shabbos, I want to measure the limits of Shabbos. So there we know it's 2,000 ammas, no dispute. An amma over there is six tfachim. Clear, plain and simple, right? But in the discussion of building the Beis HaMikdash, so sometimes we're going to convert from a six amma, six tefach amma, to a five tefach amma. It's based on psukim, where the Gemara is going to quote the psukim in just a moment. What is, however, up for discussion is what parts of the Beis HaMikdash need the five tefach amma.
Is it the same as the desert? When they were in the desert?
Yeah, I assume it's
Beis HaMikdash and desert was the same.
I assume it's the same discussion. And then, right? Okay, let's see inside. Hanan Hasam. So, we'll start with the Mishnah and Kalim. Okay, we'll start this discussion today. We're not I see the time. We're not going to get all the way through the end of this discussion, but we'll start with the beginning. And again, a lot of this talk we know already, because after gone through Zvachim and we went through the dimensions of the Mizbeach, it's pretty straightforward. Rabbi Meir Omer Kol Amos Shayu BeMikdash Beinonis Chutz Mi Mizbeach HaZahav VeHakerem VaSof VeYisod. So Rabbi Meir says, I limit this the application of the five Tefach Amah. I limit it to the golden Mizbeach and to the outer Mizbeach. The Keren, the Sovid, the Yesod, the three boxes, one on top of another, that make the outer Mizbeach. Good. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Amas Binyan, Shisha Tfachim, Mishal Kalim, Chamisha. And Rabbi Yehuda has a much more broader application. Rabbi Yehuda says, any Kli in the Beis HaMikdash, including the Shulchan, is going to be made up of an Amah that's made up of five Tfachim. Good. Now, once we know that, we go back to our Mishnah. We understand that's right, the same machlokas between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda and our Mishnah in terms of the length of the table. Good. Amar Rav Yochanan, now on this Mishnah in Kalim, Rav Yochanan says, Shnei Mikra Chadashu. They're both getting it from the same Pasuk. Ve'elamidos ha-mizbech v'amos, and again, Pasuk in Yechezkel, which describes the building of the Beis HaMikdash, third Beis HaMikdash. Ve'elamidos ha-mizbech v'amos ama v'tofach, the Cheka Ama, the Ama Rochav, Ugvula El Sifasa Saviv, Zeres Achav, the Ze Gav HaMizbeach. Okay, this is the back of the Mizbeach. That's the Pasuk in Yechezkel. And now what the Gemara is going to do is go through each part of the Pasuk. We'll go through this, we'll handle just a little bit today and we'll continue tomorrow. Cheka Ama Ze Yesod. Amarochiv Zesove. The Yesod is the foundation on the Mizbeach. That's the bottom layer. That one 32 by 32 amas. Then the next one that goes on top of that is the Soviv. Ugvulas Vasa Saviv Zeres Ayachad El Kranos, that refers to the horns of the Mizbeach. Zegava Mizbeach Zemizbeach Hazahav. The words Gava Mizbeach refers to the golden Mizbeach. Rameir Savar Zehu Ba'ama Bas Chamisha. So Rameir says, look, that's it. These are the ones that are subject to the smaller Amma, the five Tefach Amma. HaKol Amma Skelim Ba'Amma Ba'Shesh, meaning with everything else, even in the Beis HaMikdash, Amma Ba'Shesh, you use an Amma that's six Tefachim. Rabbi Yehuda Savar Kazeh, you call Amos Kelim. So, Rabbi Meir says Kazeh, meaning in the Beis HaMikdash, all Kelim are going to be used with the five Tefach measure, not the six Tefach measure. Okay. And now, from this point forward, we're going to pause now, but from this point forward, we're going to see, how does this work exactly? Now, by tomorrow, I'll draw it up on the board, right? I know some of you have the picture, but so we're basically now going to describe a Mizbeach measured either with a 6 Tefach measure versus a 5 Tefach measure, and you're going to see that as we try to use a 5 Tefach measure, it's just not going to work logistically. Right, from a architectural design, it's simply not going to work. And we'll go through the give and take tomorrow in terms of why it can't work. But if it can't work, so then what do we do with the drush of Rav Meir? Okay, stay tuned. Tomorrow, based on a lot of based on Mikdash talk. La Mizbeach talk.